हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 16. Chapter 16 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikshit asked Sukadeva Goswami question 10.14 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 10.16.2. King Parikshit inquired, O learned sage, please explain how the Supreme Personality of Godhead chastised the serpent Kaliya within the unfathomable waters of the Jamuna, and how it was that Kaliya had been living there for so many ages. Srila Sukadeva Goswami answers this question in this chapter and the next. The rhetorical questions uttered by the Nagapatnis in verse 35, as well as the one uttered by Kaliya in verse 58, do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes Lord Sri Krishna's pastimes of subduing the serpent Kaliya within the lake adjoining the river Jamuna, and his showing mercy to Kaliya in response to the prayers offered by Kaliya's wives, the Nagapatnis. To restore the purity of the Yamuna's water, which had been contaminated by Kaliya's poison, Lord Krishna climbed into a kadamba tree on the river bank and jumped into the water. Then he began fearlessly playing within the water like a maddened elephant. Kaliya could not tolerate Krishna's trespassing upon his personal residence, and the serpent quickly went up to the Lord and bit him on the chest. Then Krishna's friends saw this, they fell down on the ground unconscious. At that time, all sorts of evil omens appeared in Braja, such as earth tremors, falling stars, and the trembling of various creatures' left limbs. The residents of Vrindavan thought, today Krishna went to the forest without Balaram, so we do not know what great misfortune may have befallen him. Thinking in this way, they traced the path of Krishna's footprints to the bank of the Jamuna. Within the water of the lake adjoining the river, they saw Lord Krishna, the very essence of their lives, enwrapped in the coils of a black snake. The residents thought the three worlds had become empty, and they prepared to enter the water. But Lord Balaram checked them, knowing well the power of Krishna. Then Lord Krishna, seeing how disturbed his friends and relatives had become, expanded his body greatly and forced the serpent to loosen his grip and release him. Next, the Lord began playfully dancing about on the serpent's hoods. By this wonderful, boisterous dancing, Sri Krishna trampled the serpent's 1,000 hoods until his body slackened. Vomiting blood from his mouth, Kaliya finally understood that Krishna was the primeval personality, Lord Narayana, the spiritual master of all moving and non-moving creatures, and he took shelter of him. Seeing how very weary Kaliya had become, his wives, the Nagapatnis, bowed down at Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Then they offered him various prayers in hopes of gaining their husband's freedom. Quote, it is quite befitting that you have brought our cruel husband to this condition. Indeed, by your anger, he has gained great benefit. What piety Kaliya must have amassed in his previous lives. Today he has borne upon his head the dust of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, the attainment of which is difficult for even the mother of the universe, Goddess Lakshmi. Please kindly forgive the offense Kaliya has committed out of ignorance and allow him to live. Satisfied by the Nagapatni's prayers, Krishna released Kaliya, who slowly regained his sensory and vital powers. Then Kaliya, in a distressed voice, acknowledged the offense he had committed, and finally he offered Krishna many prayers and said he was ready to accept his command. Krishna told him to leave the Jamuna Lake with his family and return to Ramanaka Island, Shloka Rusharna, some area verses. Verses 1 to 23, the intolerable anxiety of the Rajavasis. 24 to 30, Sri Krishna's masterful dance. 31 to 53, the Nagapatni's prayer for mercy. 54 to 67, Sri Krishna pardons Kaliya and sends him away. Verses 1 to 23, the intolerable anxiety of the Brajavasis. Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seeing that the Jamuna River had been contaminated by the black snake Kaliya, desired to purify the river, and thus the Lord banished him from it. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 1 to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Right, so this is pleasing to Krishna, his interaction with Kaliya is acting in this way. Then the whole idea is that Prayojana means Krishna's pleasure. So when Krishna does something for his pleasure, that's Prayojana. Right? So then the devotees take part in that process. King Parikit inquired, O learned sage, please explain how the Supreme Personality of Godhead chastised the serpent Kaliya within the unfathomable waters of the Jamuna, and how it was that Kaliya had been living there for so many ages. O Brahma, the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, freely acts according to his own desires. Who could be satiated when hearing the nectar of the magnanimous pastime he performed as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan? Right? So he's inquiring about this because there's an interest, but at the same time, it's just the discussion of the Lord's pastimes that is of interest. Right? That's the actual point. Then these details just bring out the nectar. It's not that we're dealing here with just inquisitiveness, like the jigyasu. Jigyasu is just, it's an interesting point, I'd like to know. Not that it has anything to do with Krishna, not that it actually has anything to do with the taste for Krishna consciousness and Krishna katha, not that it has anything to do with deepening our relationship with Krishna, right? It's just, it sounds interesting. Tell me more. That's the jigyasu, right? So if anybody ever thought, well, I'm a jigyasu, I'm kind of superior to the Arta and Artartis, then think again. Right? Sri Sukadev Goswami said, yes.
Maharaj, what is the attitude to ask a right question like Maharaj Parikshit?
Ah, very good. The idea is that means the beginning stage will be is the standard is the jnani. Mm. Right? Means of those four, not jnani meaning, you know, a Maya body here. Okay. Jnani meaning the of the Arta Artarti Jigyasu and Jnani. The Jnani actually wants to know about the Lord. Right? But it's knowing about the Lord because then you become, you get the knowledge, you become, satisfied in that knowledge about Krishna because that's the only thing that is satisfying. It's not like the Jigyasu is just intellectually interesting. Right? And brings about that more faith and that more security to surrender to Krishna. Right? Because if he's, you see all these nice stories, you see all these things, how he takes care of the devotees, you have more of a tendency to be okay with surrendering. Right? You know, so it enhances that, but it's not on the level of pure devotion necessarily, you know, in general. Because it's about knowing about the Lord rather than necessarily the expression of the love in that knowing, right? But because it's about the Lord in a positive way, you know, or I can say in a dynamic way, because it's about yourself and the Lord, then that brings you to the point of knowing about the Lord because it's the Lord's pastimes, his name, form, qualities, pastimes of paraphernalia, associates, dham, fame, you know, all these different things, they're all special. And so that one starts to develop that taste for that. Right? And that taste then brings one forward to then the Uttama platform of Bhava. So inquiring about the Lord is good. So even for the Jigyasu, it's good because he could be inquiring about, you know, the tsetse fly in Africa or something. So therefore, it is good. Anyone, Arta, Artarti, Jigyasu, they are good because they're connecting to Krishna. But it's not necessarily a dynamic relationship. It's something that you want from Krishna. So it's more about Krishna can remove my anxieties. Krishna can fulfill my material needs. Krishna can fulfill my intellectual needs. But the jnani, it's more about wanting to know to establish a relationship. So it's actually, you know, positive. It's moving forward, but it's the beginning stage. Right? So that's why when you have these questions that actually aren't really relevant, but there was a word here, you know, it's like, well, what do you mean by ages or unlimited or, you know, unfathomable or, you know, these kind of things that, you know, yeah, it means they're part, it can maybe bring up, but much of the time it's just for interest's sake. You know, it's not actually like that. So, and if you ask, why are you asking the question, they'll just say, it sounds interesting. You know what I'm saying? So that's jigyasu. But it's about the Lord. So you have to see as if the environment, if it's just general questions, naturally you answer like that. But if it's on a specific topic, then depending on the audience, it may or may not be relevant. Does that make sense? But if it's a question from the jnani, that's relevant. But in any case, if it's a general audience or it's a new audience, then you deal with all of the questions like that. But the point is you also have to see is what kind of attitude goes along with it. So if they're kind of proud that I've asked such an intellectual question, then you might adjust the pride along with answering the question. Yeah. Like that. So, yes.
Mahesh, among the Artharthi and Jidnasu, there also progression is there?
Not necessarily. Okay. Means one is the emotional, right? The other is material needs. The other is intellectual needs. So it's all about your own needs. So whether it's external needs, emotional needs, or intellectual needs. So body, mind, and words. So, but they're connecting it to Krishna. So that's good. But it's about what they'll get from it, not about what Krishna will get from it. Right? Does that make sense? That's why the Nijnani is better, because then that platform, Krishna's involved, actually not just as the order supplier, but him as a person you're trying to get to know. Like that. You understand? So that's, you know, it's just like, let's say you don't know a person and you meet and that, and then they seem interesting or someone you'd like to get to know. The first thing you want to know is about them. Right? You know, so that's on it's a personal kind of thing. You know, like let's say you're riding on the train, right? Bombay to Calcutta. So you're on there for 33 hours, no? So then while you're there, then people, that's what they'll ask. So, oh, yeah, where are you from? What do you do? This, that, that. Says, oh, you're really this. What, you know, what mission? So it's personal. But it's just kind of, it's not really directly cultivating the relationship, but it's giving a basis on which it could. Does that make sense? So the other three just means, what is your contamination? Right? If it's emotional needs are the strongest, external needs are the strongest, or intellectual needs are the strongest. So they'll tend to start in those places. And then it moves to the jnani. From the jnani, you can get to the Madhyama platform. Right? From the other three, you can't. Because it's still about you. Right? So does that make sense? So the jnani is the bridge. So the other one is just what you are. That's all. So that doesn't matter, because you can't progress from that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
The person is asking for pure devotion, inquiring about pure devotion. Person is doing sadhana. What is his inquiry? How he inquires?
Means he wants to know how that, you know, we can understand the relationship between, you know, sambandhi gyan, between the living entity, the Lord, and the material energy. And how in that we can then, with the right attitude, the right knowledge, perform the correct activities to get the proper result for Krishna. So that's then what we're... That is our inquiry. So, yeah?
That's why we have submissive inquiry and service together,
yes.
No?
Yes, yes. Because submissive inquiry means you want to apply it. If it's attitude inquiry, then it means you just want to, you know, you generally, there's a misgiving there. See, if there's a doubt, it just means I'm trying to apply it, but I run into obstacles here I don't know how to deal with. Then that question is proper. If it's a misgiving, it's, you know, why, you know, What's the problem? What's wrong with Kaliya living there? You know, he's got to live somewhere. So, you know, these aren't useful questions because they're dealing with misgivings like that. Now, if you can deal with that misgiving to remove it so that they can understand the standard of pure devotional service, then even though their question technically was not of any use, the answer is of use. Right? So that's the aspect of preaching, is that even though their question does not deserve an answer, you gave an answer to remove the problem that they ask useless questions. Does that make sense?
Misgiving and doubt, what is the difference?
Doubt means it just intellectually doesn't make sense. You can't make it add up. Right? Misgiving means even you understand how it's logical, you don't want to accept it. You know what I'm saying? Because of attachment. In other words, doubt, there's no attachment. You just can't process it. Misgiving means you may not be able to process it, or you may be able to process it, but the problem is attachment. And so you're attached to a particular thing. That's why you see in the questions like we were having on Tuesday, you know, that was a lot of misgivings. yes, that's right, but what about, you know? So they're just showing attachment, which is fine, because if one is sincerely wanting to know, these doubts and misgivings are what has to be cleared. So then it goes back to what Prabhu said about submissive inquiry. So even though it may be a misgiving, but if it's submissive inquiry, then it's valuable to answer, and then one gets the benefit. But if it's with attitude, the challenge is there. Even you give a proper answer, they can't understand, because you can only understand through devotional service. Right? It's not through intellectual gymnastics that you can understand anything to do with Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? In the material world, maybe. It's not technically that it can, but because you're dealing with, you've used your intellect properly, then you have the karma in which then you can intellectually analyze material phenomena and have an understanding as much as your karma allows. Right? In other words, you've done the work to be able to do, but it's still material work to get a material benefit, right? But it's been work in the area of intellectual field, so therefore you can get an understanding in that. But when it comes to devotional, it has to be devotional piety, not material piety. So therefore, no amount of intellect can you understand. There's no one more intelligent than Brahma in the universe, and he can't understand it's Krishna. Right? And you don't have a more, you could say, intelligent manager in the universe than Indra, and he couldn't understand. Does that make sense? Right? Like that. So that's the whole thing, is material intelligence can't understand. So unless there's submissive inquiry, how will you understand the answer? So it's only due to pride, which is, you know, another synonym for madness. Right? You know? That we think that by challenge I will correct things, I'll understand things and all that. You know, it's just like the journalists. They always have to challenge in a very unsubmissive way. And they think they'll get to the truth. But, you know, maybe with materialists they'll get something. But from devotees, what can they get? Because unless there's submissive inquiry, they will not understand. That's just the way it is. It's Krishna's rules. It's his game. It's our game. Does that make sense? Yes.
When students submissively inquires and teacher gives the answer, still sometimes students are not able to understand the answers. So what are the factors so that student can understand the teacher's answers properly?
You just have to keep at it. Keep going. Sadhana. Right? In other words, just the heart is not purified enough to get the answer. Does that make sense? So as the heart becomes purified, then one can understand better. You also have the aspect of, is the pairing between student and teacher matched? because of nature. It's not that the teacher is not qualified. It's just that how he will explain and everything will be different than how you're comfortable on receiving the instruction. Does that make sense? So, like that, then that is also a thing. So you have the generic preaching, so that's why it's on, you know, it's as good as it can be. So, but it's not that, oh, we shouldn't, then therefore, oh, well, it's about them. They're not the right teacher for me. No, look at it, I'm not the right student for them. You know, try to maintain a humble position. But if it's a matter of, it that is the right, you find that when they instruct, it makes sense, but sometimes it doesn't, just means we have to keep at it, that's all. Like that. You know, it takes time to get, especially if it's something new, it takes time to get adjusted. You know, we learn the words, learn the concepts, and then slowly, slowly. That's why you see in the scriptures, repetition is one of the important aspects of philosophy. So what's repeated, that's important. Does that make sense?
Preaching process, where you're telling the student doesn't understand.
So then you find another way. So in other words, if you're looking at it from the teacher's point of view, then you explain it from one angle that you think will be the angle that will work for the particular individual or group you're working with. Then if that doesn't work, then you make an adjustment. Try a different angle. That's vichar. You just keep trying angles until it does work.
So where does it... Purity is the force. Where does this act? This principle, where does this act from the...
The purity is the force side. Means, yes, means the more pure is there in the intention and practice, then the more effect it will have. It'll be quicker.
So we'll be able to convince the front person. That's what it means? We'll be able to convince or satisfy the front person, the student.
The...
Is the purity part is
no,
there?
But I'm saying the what person?
If the purity part is there...
No, I got that. I just one word, the what person.
Teacher will be able to convince the student.
The student, okay, because you just, yeah. Huh?
It will print person.
Friend.
Front person.
Right. Front person. Okay, that's what I was asking about. Front person. Oh, okay, he means like a Shonaka Rishi. He's the front man for all the sages. Okay. Or you mean front because that's the only one you can see their hands, so you ask them the question. The guys in the back, you don't want to ask it. That will have a lot of effect. But that means by purity, then you can understand better how to get through the answer. Like that. Because Krishna will reveal. Because it's a matter of Krishna's revealing to both. Because Pariksit Maharsh became perfect by hearing. Sukadeva became perfect by speaking. So... The better one's purity in devotional service, you know, in the that will have that effect. But I'm just talking about what you will do at the time is focus on finding an avenue that will work for explaining it to that person. Because sometimes you take it that certain kinds of examples will work, but they don't. Does that make sense? So you have to start changing your examples. You know what I'm saying? You thought they were a nerd, but they're an artist. You know? You understand? So therefore you have to change your examples, change the mood, the tone. Like that, you keep doing that. Because at the time, it's not that you can work on purity so much, other than to surrender to Krishna. Purity is there, you know, the other parts of the time. You know? The intent, of course, is there. And if it's pure in the intent, then it will have a better effect. You guys are... Yeah, you see. Does that make sense? But you just keep trying until it gets through. Does that make sense? But if you have a whole group of people and one person asks a question and you explain it and everyone in the room understands except that person, then you don't have to keep explaining. You go on to the next question. Right? If nobody understands, then you keep going. But you do have... Because there is sometimes that person... who asks all kinds of strange questions that are exactly the questions everybody would love to ask, but people are too embarrassed to ask. But this person doesn't really have real proper understanding of etiquette, so they ask. And so then you answer the question, and since you're directing it at them, it's third person to everyone else, so they're comfortable with the answer, though it's exactly what they want to ask. But once you see everybody understands, then just move on, because that person will never understand. Right? Their benefit to the group is that they can ask the questions that others don't want to ask. Okay? Okay.
Maharaj, what happens when a devotee directs his jigyasa to other aspects of, of Krishna consciousness or lesser aspects of Krishna consciousness like Jyotish or Ayurveda?
But are they Krishna conscious? What makes Jyotish or Ayurveda Krishna conscious?
Because they're connected to the Vedas ultimately.
They're connected to the Vedas, okay. Yeah, so is on a dark moon night, at midnight, in, some variety of inauspicious place, like a smarshans or something, then a black goat is then sacrificed to Mother Kali with the particular, the appropriate Manksaha mantra. So do you want to further give some detail on how the astrology and astronomy is Krishna conscious?
So the idea is that, in a devotee community, some devotees might be interested in learning this.
But why do they want to learn it? What's the purpose in learning it?
They could guide the devotees.
Guide the devotees in what?
In their difficulties, in their personal...
And what's the purpose of getting them through their difficulties?
So that became...
Okay. Only took 10 steps, but we got there. You understand? This is the difficulty with the indirect aspects, is that it can take us a long time before we actually see the connection to Krishna. You understand? What is the Veda? The Veda is the breathing of Krishna, the instructions of Krishna. So that means the Ayurveda and the astrology, then they're directly connected to Krishna in the way that they're coming from Krishna. Right? In the way of knowledge. Krishna is knowledge. But at the same time, the real point of knowledge or the Veda is developing love for Krishna. And then expressing that love through the application of your knowledge and skills, right? So, therefore, if you're using the knowledge of the Veda to please Krishna, actually, then you can say in that way, it's connected to devotional service. You understand? But you name me one, just one, astrologer or astronomer who can explain it like that. Got a name? No. So that's the whole problem. We just take it, it's connected to the Veda, and right there, what's going on? False ego's there. And attachment. Yes, and so I can do this for Krishna, and we can help so many people in the community, and they have so many difficulties, we can get them through, and everything like that. And all that was just professional false ego. Because I'm the man, and I can help, and I'm the friend of everyone, right? Because Krishna's the lord of all the planets, and he's the enjoyer of all the planets, I'll accept that, but I'm the friend of everyone. You understand? So you have to be very careful. You can't just take it for granted. That's the problem. The difficulty is when you come from a pious background, you get conditioned by the mode of goodness, and you think that mode of goodness is pure goodness, when it is not. So now, being conditioned by goodness is way better than being conditioned by passion or ignorance. Hands down. But it keeps you in the material world. Smartas, they're comfortable. Really comfortable. But are they devotees? No. So you have to be very, very careful that this element of being, because the ones in passion and ignorance, they can't even understand the purpose of how it connects to the Veda and that, of the astronomy and Ayurveda. So they tend to avoid it unless they can see some particular benefit from themselves, but it's not because it's Shastra that they follow it, it's because they're going to get the benefit. As long as they get the benefit, they follow, and as soon as they don't get the benefit, then they stop following. Does that make sense? But the person conditioned by goodness, because it's Shastric, then he'll follow it, whether he's getting benefit or not. Because he's not getting benefit, he knows that, there's more you know, some more serious karma here, so it'll take a little longer to get the benefit. So he has that faith and he sticks it out. That's the mode of goodness. And it is superior, but we have to understand where the superiority is. It's on the mundane platform. Nothing to do with spiritual. And the sooner that's gotten through all of your head, then the sooner everything will just take off. You understand? Because instead of it being about pure devotion, it's all about this professional. And it may be based on the mode of goodness, you know, we're being generous, then it's going to be a stumbling block. And going back in the years, that professionalism wasn't so much a stumbling block because the focus was on the pure devotion. But as we become more inclined towards that, our lifestyle is now kind of the trending lifestyle, right? You know what I'm saying? The professional in India was in no way a focus in the modern environment before, right? Indians, you know, the nerds, you know, you engage them, right? Mm-hmm. Silicon Valley figured out early you could keep them busy. But now, recently, then they're doing well. They're going around the world. They're being recognized and all that. And now you can sit wherever you are, be your, you know, mode of goodness, Indian self, and at the same time be that, you know, trendy, up-to-date, you know, kind of person and all that kind of happening. You know, how you say, how did he say it, or who was said it? I can't remember who said it, if it was, but whatever it is, one of your stardust starlets, then they said hip and happening, I think that's the term. So then the problem comes is that then you think everything's okay. You're on the top of the wave. You're hanging 10. You understand? But then the problem comes is then that gets in the way because it's becoming more and more obvious that it's a bunch of professionals rather than a bunch of pure devotees. And on the cultural platform, hands down, way ahead of any community in the world. Because they all start in passion and ignorance. And so here, starting at goodness, then it works. But the problem with goodness is, it's not pure. And with time, goodness being mixed with passion and ignorance, if you take the goodness part for granted, then you'll focus on the passion and ignorance, so then what will happen? Next birth? America, America. And not necessarily God shedding his grace anymore, but you know, 4 hurricanes in one season, that's not shedding his grace, right? Does this make sense? So we have to catch this attitude. It means the point is the intelligence, that dynamicness, being able to apply it, that's good. You don't want to lose that. That's very important. It must be kept. But unless the attitude is there of pure devotional service, and that's forefront, not, yeah, of course it's about Krishna. You know, astrology, astronomy, yeah, it's about Krishna, of course, but yeah, I'm going to be helping the people and like that. Why not Krishna first? If you just switch these two, then it becomes so much better. Right? In other words, Krishna is explaining karma yoga in the 3rd, 4th chapters, and 5th chapters where you combine the karma yoga with the jnana yoga. Right? So then it's you know, it becomes actually very dynamic. But then at the end of the Gita, then Krishna mentions about giving up all this attachment to dharma, all this attachment to the mode of goodness, and just being attached to pleasing Krishna. And then, according to your nature, you serve Krishna. So Arjuna, he's attached to as being a Kshatriya. Then he learns how to engage his Kshatriya-ness in Krishna's service. But then at the end, Krishna says, no, just try to please me. So it's not about his Kshatriya-ness. It's about pleasing Krishna. And so, how will a Kshatriya please Krishna? Doing Kshatriya stuff. But it's about pleasing Krishna first, not about being a Kshatriya and connecting that to Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? So, we may be on the platform of connecting the Kshatriya to Krishna. That's fine. But we should understand that trying to please Krishna and engaging the Kshatriya, this is the higher level, and not go on as if we're on the pinnacle or the acme of perfection. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because you can get by with it being situated in goodness, but when all the Westerners start saying the same thing, it really doesn't look good. Because they're not situated in goodness. Because they're not going to accept the Vedas because it's Veda. They're only going to accept what's practical. And by association, by always talking about these things, because where's the dynamic that, yeah, we're happening here, is because the West accepts that you're happening. Otherwise, go back 20 years. The guys were just as smart. In fact, probably even smarter. Right? Does that make sense? I remember, like, let's say in South India. Bengal, then you can give nice lecture. You can go for a long time as long as there's, you know, it's got a lot of personal elements to it. Like, not as much philosophy, but it doesn't have to be pure stories, but it has to have that kind of personal element. North India, it's got to be stories. And now and again, when people fall asleep, even during the stories, you start a kirtan and that, they all wake up, clap their hands, and all that, then you start talking again, right? In South India, you can just talk straight philosophy for 2 hours, and everyone, men, women, children, everybody's listening. No one, right? Now, is that brain or is that brain? Right? That's intelligent. So, not that they've been any less. It's not that now, yes, the Indian is up to date. He's always been up to date. It just took a while for the West to acknowledge it. But the point is the problem is the authority for the Indians being up to date is the Western culture. The first world Western culture. I don't think you're worried about what they say in Uruguay or something. Right? Does that make sense? So as long as America and England... You know, Aussies, it's okay, but not a big deal. And continental Europe, you know, kind of recognizing, you know, then, you know, Western Europe, then, you know, yes, see, that's where we're happening. You understand? So, but the problem is by that association, what's going to happen? The goodness will go down since they don't have any. And all that'll be left is passion ignorance, because the goodness and the pure goodness, it's, of course it's for that. Of course, you know, I mean, why even discuss it? It's so obvious. But as my questions proved, it's not obvious at all. It took you 10 questions to get to the point of actual Krishna consciousness. And that was pretty good. Some people take 20. You know, so not bad. You understand? So we have to cut through this professional veneer and get down to the reality of Krishna consciousness. We're a professional person, we're intelligent, we do things properly, we're good at organizing, we're good at executing. That you keep, just like Arjuna is an excellent warrior. But what you have to get rid of is the attitude. Gita opens with an attitude that's wrong. Gita ends with the proper attitude. So you have to get into that, because otherwise this kind of stuff, it's not nice. As you notice, the last so many days, all they talk about is the attitude, and specifically professional attitudes. You know what I'm saying? There's a, what do you call it? It's not empowered. What's the one where you take make your own authority? You empower yourself?
Self-appointed
or that, yeah. So the professional is the self-appointed authority of everybody. And he's the perfect perfection of everything. Like that.
Emancipation.
So all these, you understand, so all these things, is these are unimportant. The attitude's the first thing. Because submissive inquiry. Submissive is the point. Then inquiry. Because you can inquire and not be submissive, then it's useless. Only submissive, then the inquiry has it. So the attitude is the real thing. Right? Does that make sense? Yes? So, if the attitude is right, and you have the nature to be involved in, let's say, astronomy or astrology or Sanskrit or, you know, whatever is the Vedic system that's there, or the rituals, like that. You know, the traditional Vedic knowledge, or the, especially the Brahminical knowledge. And that is your nature, or even, let's say, even more, your background. You know, your parents, your grandparents, everybody was Ayurvedic doctors or astrologers or something. Then, nice. But you have to understand, is devotional service has its own attitude, because the attitude that's here is the attitude to stay here. And the attitude they have in the spiritual world is the attitude to get to the spiritual world. So then it has to be as I have the nature to do this. I could very easily learn this. And by learning this, I could then benefit the devotees by showing them how to connect all these aspects to Krishna. Right? So it's the same thing. That connected to Krishna, management connected to Krishna. You know, whatever it is that you're good at, you have to connect it to Krishna. Otherwise, it's just attitude. It's just attitude. That was one thing that struck me so much. And this is just showing the stark difference. But then we're talking about the difference between this, what I'm talking about and what we're discussing now. Means in that. In the Western allopath medicine, then you can't make any statement. You can't think, well, you know, my stomach's off and this and that, and it's because of this, and you know, there's too much bile in this. You can't say that. The doctor gets annoyed, in fact, insulted. He's the professional. You're the layman. Your only business is coming to him and giving him money. That's all the value of your life is worth. Because he knows everything, and you know absolutely nothing. And he's not even going to waste his time explaining it to you, because you'll never understand, because you are a layman. And he knows everything. Sound familiar? Okay. So, therefore, you can't say anything. You can't bring about conclusions. You can't say what it's from, because he's the guy who will say everything, because he's the only one in the universe who knows. Right? Extremely annoying, because most of the time they don't know anyway. They just guess. But the attitude is like so terrible. No one likes them. Right? Then, coming to India, the Ayurvedic doctors, they take the pulse, they can tell you what it all is, and they'll tell you how you have to change your lifestyle, how you do this. In other words, how you can keep yourself healthy and not even bother coming back to them. And then, having learned from them a few times, and you start talking about the balance of the mucus, bile, and air, and this and that, and how you did this and this one off and like that, and then they're happy with it. That impressed me. But that's motive goodness instead of passion and ignorance. So pure goodness has to mean, as you see, how Krishna's there. How is Krishna the mucus? How is he the bile? How is he the air? How does all these things affect? How does that all work? That's being Krishna conscious and being that. How do the planets work? Do the planets have their own potency? Right? Saturn, he's a devotee, right? So therefore, you know, then you're going to, he will represent more closely to the Lord. So the Lord's known as Hari. So Hari has 10 hands. Can you stop him taking away things with your two hands? No, but if he wants to give you, can you even hold all he gives with your two hands? No. You understand? Like that. So these things, then, understand that. Mars, then his lord is Nrsingadev. Does that make sense? The moon, then it's Aniruddha. You know, Krishna. Sun is Rama. You know, and how do these work? How does that nature of Krishna, how is that found there? So they're just the medium for Krishna's potency to come through so that you can get all these benefits that you're looking for. But it's not the planet. They say, oh, I got how to please the planet. No, how to please Krishna. Oh, you know, just wear this ring, do this, do that, and all that. You know, stand in your head and, you know, pull your left earlobe. And all these kind of foolish things. They don't even understand. You've done karma. You can't, by doing these other things, get rid of it. You know what I'm saying? It's like this. Let us say you're in the kitchen and you drop something on the floor. Okay? It makes a mess. So now is there a ring you can wear or a place to put a mirror or a mantra you can chant that mess will go away? No. So why would bad karma from before, there'd be some method to get rid of it. It's illogical, but guaranteed 110% people think like this. It's impossible. By learning new habits and behaviors, it simply creates auspiciousness for the future. But it's not going to get rid of the past. An action done has that reaction. You do good, it gives you a good reaction. You do bad, it gives you a bad reaction. Not that good gets rid of bad. You know what I'm saying? It just, you can start to adjust so that in the future you start getting good, giving up the... So unless you're educating people like that, how are you benefiting them? No, wear this ring, then the influence will be reduced and this and that. But are the planets just bad? Right? You understand? Why not the point that they're giving all these good benefits, but because you're dealing badly, therefore they can't give those to you? You understand? So we're not even understanding the philosophy behind it. We just learn the technique and think, bingo, it's all Krishna conscious. I'm a devotee, so anything I do is a devotional. But I'm a sadhaka, so therefore, technically, I'm not a devotee. I'm a practicing devotee. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say we have an intern. Right? So, you have an intern in the hospital. Okay? So, they're an intern in the hospital. So, they can say, is there a doctor? But are they a doctor? No. So, therefore, is everything they do medicine? No. They assist. Doctors do stuff. So, we are assisting the spiritual master, assisting the previous acharyas, serving Krishna. So, we're not the doctor. We're not the devotee. We're a practicing devotee. So, we can't take it, I'm a devotee, so everything I do is devotional. Therefore, then I learn astronomy, then automatically it's devotional. You understand? So what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with a misunderstanding of the proper attitude, the proper identity. And unless that's corrected, we can do so many nice things. But you can still smell the professional. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not joking. With time, this smell is getting more and more Western. Literally. We have to understand that. Because why did you become a doctor or lawyer before? Was because it made more money. And making more money, then you'd please the family. So your mother's happy, father's happy, you can take care, you can buy the bigger house, you can set them up nicely because the time they'll get old and that, and then you'll have children and you have all the relatives. So the authority was you were supporting your family. It still had nothing to do with, you know, the Vedic, but, you know, you were doing it. But now it's because it's professional, it's prestigious. And that prestige does not come from India, it comes from the West. Just Indians have adopted it, so now it becomes part of their scene. But that means they just join the international community of people in the modes of passion and ignorance. Does this make sense? Yeah. So we actually have to look at this personally very, very carefully, that we don't get distracted by this. We're, as Arjuna, we're no less professional. In fact, if you're doing it for Krishna, you can see more because the ego won't get in the way. You'll actually be more professional. The more the professional attitude comes up, actually the less professional you are. Because professional is supposed to be without that, their own subjective element. But as people's false ego gets bigger, the ego has to be considered so much that it's not actually about the work, it's about the ego. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to be very careful. So yes, it can be engaged if it's your nature. Right? And the ones who should be engaging it is they have that brahminical nature. So therefore they can do that and benefit devotees whether they'll get much return from it or not. Even better, it's for free. Right? If you're doing it more as a hobby and as knowing it as a hobby, you can help others, you know, even though it's not your occupation. You know what I'm saying? Let's say someone's like, let's say a businessman, but he really likes astronomy, you know, or astrology, or And so then he can give devotees advice on that, but it has to be absolutely for free. There is no dakshin. Now, if someone's brahminical and it is an occupation, then the dakshin has to be whatever they give. Because if you say, no, you have to give this much, you lose your potency. I've seen so many big guys in India. They're famous in India. Like that, but because they charge a regular fee, come back after 20, 30 years. Who's ever heard of them? They lose their potency. Brahman means whatever comes. If you're Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, it's for free if it's brahminical stuff. If you're thinking, I'll become that and then I'll make a business out of it and all that, better you don't touch it. Right? Because you'll have to impress the people, you'll have to make them want to give you the money, that they'll feel it's of value. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So you have to be very careful when you're dealing with these things, because they're not like Western knowledge. These actually have a particular potency. The Western knowledge, it changes from day to day, but this is actual fact, how the universe works. The principle behind the Western knowledge is also an eternal principle. Is that something?
Rupa says, do the needful.
Do the needful, yes.
Then that may be applied wrongly or something.
Yes, well, it has to be careful about do the needful means you're practical, you do what needs to get done. But at the same time, doing the needful doesn't mean that counters all the other things that are there. The proper etiquettes, the proper understandings, the proper application. One has to be very careful of that. Is that make sense? That's the whole thing. In the modern economic environment, or the modern economic political environment, then doing the needful means that I just do what actually works directly, between the situation I'm there and the particular result I want, and not considering people in between. People are just an obstacle or an asset. That's all. It means I can use them to get it done. They're a tool or they're an obstacle. That's all. They're not actually people. So if you're dealing with people, and therefore you're doing the needful, because the needful has to include the etiquette of dealing with everybody, but you're being as practical as possible. So that's, so in other words, you do what needs to get done. Does that make sense? It's just like you're traveling on the road and all that, let's say, and so then you stop at the petrol station, you have to go to the bathroom, okay? So then you go to the bathroom and all that, and there's not a facility to wash your feet and, things like that. You wash your hands, you do stuff like this and that, but then when you get back to your house or by the temple, you take off those funky shoes and you'll wash your feet. So that was doing the needful. But now some people say, I was doing the needful. Now they don't have to worry about it at home. They don't have to wash their feet at home. You understand? That's the problem when we take it by the needful as the primary point. No, doing the needful is the secondary. See, first you have, means if you're just talking about the process, you have Dharma Shastra. Right? That's what a human does. Now, to be more specific in the ways of how you do those things that profit is obtained from Dharma, you get Artha, you have the Artha Shastra. And then you have, under that, you have the Niti Shastra, which is just the mechanics, the practical mechanics of how you get stuff done. But it's called ethics because it includes dealing with the mentality that's there. So the modern ethics is not ethics really at all. It's in impersonal dealing with dead matter ethics. But it's not actually, it's not human ethics. Because human ethics means you have to deal with the people that are involved also. Right? Let's say you're a manager, there's another devotee who's older than you and all that, you have to deal with him, but at the same time as you're the authority. Now you can't deal with him like you would someone else who's younger than you. You have to deal with the proper etiquette, but you're still in charge. So now you have to work out how to get that done. One may say, but that's so difficult. but that's what it means to be a manager. If it's a matter of not difficult, then anybody can be a difficult. I mean, anybody can do it. Right? So therefore, that's what it means. You have to go through the trouble. You know what I'm saying? So that it goes, all goes together. The problem is the modern only wants the golden egg. They don't want the side of the duck that eats. But they don't understand they're killing the duck. Like we said before, you know, companies come up and they're there for a long, long time. They're just like part of the scene. Nowadays they come and go like flies. Because they don't follow any etiquette. They don't actually follow. So they just catch that one part, but they don't see the rest of it. So it all goes down. Because artha comes from dharma. Results come from practicing dharma. You don't practice dharma, you don't get results. If you're getting results and not practicing them, you practiced before. But at some point, that karma will run out. And then what? You know what I'm saying? Then there'll be that miserable old guy that used to be in charge, used to be, you know, famous, and used to be, you know, acknowledged, and now he's not, and no one cares, and he'll be thinking it's everybody's fault, they don't recognize how great I am. No, it's because you're not great anymore. You were great, but you're not anymore. You understand? So it comes from that. And what's the purpose of dharma? To please Krishna. So therefore, I am practicing my dharma to please Krishna. Now, in doing that, I'm going to use the techniques of artha and niti to get the practical stuff done. But because it's all connected to dharma, and dharma is connected to Krishna, I'm going to see that it's done in such a way that pleases Krishna. Does that make sense? So doing the needful is manager's means doing the needful. If you have an ideal situation, you do it in the ideal way. Why would you not? But if there's not the ideal, then you'll use the next thing. And then if that's not there, the next thing, the next thing. You don't automatically take the 10th class option because it's just easy. You make the endeavor. If first class is available, you use it. Why? Because first class is Krishna's first choice. Second class is Krishna's second choice. Right? But we're looking at it, 10th class is my first choice because it's the easiest. And first class is my last choice because it's the hardest. So who's it about? Us or Krishna? So it changes the dynamic. It doesn't change the mechanics. It changes the whole culture. That's the whole point, is we want to be professional and take on the Western culture. And that's not going to work. It's not going to work. Do you understand?
Yeah. Ayurveda and several other sciences are certainly at least under the Vedic domain.
Yes.
But my question is, what are the challenges or how careful a devotee should be when we are trying to acquire knowledge and skills from the outside world for Krishna service? So I'll just connect it to something that you had said earlier. In Sunday, in your class, Bhagavatam class in temple, you mentioned the ascending and the descending process.
Right.
You said that the ascending is the modern way. You start down and try to go up somewhere.
Yes, yes.
Whereas descending is like you start from the absolute truth and then try to understand everything.
Yes.
But as practicing devotees, you know, we understand spiritual knowledge, let's say, through Prabhupada's books. We start reading. But somebody may have a service of, let's say, he's a counselor for, married couples or...
A counselor for married couples, okay.
Or taking care of children or whatever.
Right.
So, what happens is, because of lack of time or lack of enough knowledge or whatever training, he may not be able to complete the descending process where, you know, he would start from Prabhupada books and actually understand, you know, these finer details as well. You know, because their principles may be there, but those kind of details may not be there. So we see very routinely several devotees, they take certain stuff, knowledge and skills from the Western perspective or, you know, things over there.
Right.
And then they try to link it to Krishna Krishna is it.
Okay.
You know, so...
Where are you from?
I'm from Pune.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I just want to know, so it depends on the answer.
Yeah, so people try to do such things. So I wanted to know, what are the challenges and dangers in doing that?
Challenges and dangers is Okay, let's just take your example that somebody is a counselor for married couples. Okay, so what's the whole purpose of being a counselor for married couples?
The purpose is to ensure that the married couples are happy in Krishna service and, you know, they continue in their family life nicely.
Okay, so therefore we have to make the connection between happy and Krishna service. We can't take that as automatic. You understand? Because we're taking, if they're happy, they're automatically Krishna conscious. Okay, this is my...
But yeah, because most of the time we see when...
Here,
devotees,
no buts. You understand? You have to catch this point, is that therefore, what is, how does Prabhupada explain a couple being engaged in Krishna service? It's not a trick question. This is the problem. Right? So, in other words, husband and wife cooperate performing their own duties to be Krishna conscious. Right? So that's actually what marriage counseling is about. How to understand what are your duties. Because if they're unhappy, much of the time it's like you could have a happy married couple that are not Krishna conscious. So therefore, happiness is not a sign of Krishna consciousness. So therefore, then if they're not happy, that means their duties aren't being done. And so that means they don't understand how their duty connects to Krishna. That's the real problem. Not that they don't know their duty. It's that they don't know how to connect their duty to Krishna. You understand? So now they have to understand what's their duty, where it's gone wrong, how by their interaction, because they'll both come in and have a whole Portnoy's complaint about what each other's doing, right? And so then in that, then they're going to, you know, say, but you have to show what's actually behind it. What's the nature of the man? What's the nature of the woman? And where the mistake is.
Yeah.
And then how that connects back to Krishna.
Okay.
Does that make sense? And in doing that, then when they do their duties, they'll be happy.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So that's Vedic marriage counseling. Very straightforward, very easy, very motive goodness. So you just have to point out how they've been in passion and ignorance. You have to bring it up to goodness and how that goodness connects back to Krishna, the pure goodness. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Modern counseling, if they're not happy in this and that, what's one of the first questions you have to ask? How's their physical relationship? So therefore, they'll be happy when they're having plenty of sex. So what's getting in the way of them having sex? So therefore, the guy's acting like this, so the woman doesn't want to have sex with him. So if he changes how he behaves, now she'll want to have sex. Now they'll be a happy couple. What does this got to do with Krishna consciousness?
Yeah, that part certainly does not have, certainly.
Yes, but,
what I was asking,
but like you said, we're talking about reality. Some devotees are talking like this. I'm also talking reality. You understand? So the whole point is that's why learning how does these things do, unless everything that you're learning, you're comparing it to Krishna consciousness, what you've learned from Prabhupada, how are you going to give any benefit to devotees? Because what I explained is the complete package of dealing with that. Now, from them, you may have some nice ways of doing. They're angry, they can't talk, so there might be some little tricks to get them to talk. But what are they going to talk about? That you have to take from Prabhupada. Now, the problem that devotees will come, oh, they have some tricks to get them to talk, so that means everything they have is good. No. Just like modern psychology. They know how to, if somebody is really emotional or really crazy, then the psychologist, they can get them to talk and open up. But what they're supposed to talk about, where they're supposed to take that discussion, what's the goal of that discussion, they do not have a clue. Their idea is you're situated in sense gratification like everybody else, now you're fine. I've heard about temples where the whole temple within a few weeks disappears. I mean, leaves the temple and goes out back into karmi lifestyle because someone in the temple had problems. They went to one of these karmi professionals. They got help so that they became inspired. They told everybody else how they were inspired. And what's that inspiration? Sense gratification. Therefore, what happened? Everyone in the temple left. So that's your modern professional thing. So unless you can see it connected to Krishna, why bother? You can say nobody can help, but no, you can't. That's the whole point. If you use anybody, see, the Vedas describe knowledge. You have paravidya, which means transcendental knowledge. Then you have aparavidya, which is the Vedic knowledge that's connected to paravidya. That's its definition. If it's not connected to paravidya, it's just Vedic knowledge, then it's called aparavidya. Then it's called avidya, which means ignorance. So any knowledge not connected to para is ignorance. So therefore, if you cannot connect it to, then you are learning ignorance. You can say, no, but, this, that. You can go on with all your no, buts, but you're dealing with pure ignorance here. And its effect will be that. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's the whole point. Unless you know, unless you can connect it, then how is it? And if you can say, oh, but we don't know, then find out. If you can't figure it out, ask someone else. You don't know, but it's an area, no one else will know this. Because we take it that the material techniques of the thing, these are the superior, these are the lowest, this is the niti stuff. That's the whole point. These marriage counselors actually don't know the nature of men and women. They just kind of know a little bit that this happens and that happens, women kind of do this, men kind of do that. But they can't explain it properly. So how will they bring it to Krishna consciousness? Right? Does that make sense? And so the first thing you should be asking, rather than, you know, how's the sex going, is how's their sadhana going? Do they communicate? Do they discuss things? Do they have a position of companionship? Right? Because if you don't have companionship, how's the marriage going to work? You know what I'm saying? So that aspect of friendship, that's the natural relationship between souls, is friendship. So unless you have friendship in the marriage, how you'll have these other aspects? You understand? This is where you start. Now, if they're yelling and screaming about something, you start wherever they are, but you get it back around to this at some point. Right? So in other words, we'll get it back to that. The karmis will get it back to sex. Are you doing stuff that you want to do? Are you giving the other person, he wants to do this, but you don't let him do that, so therefore that, but she's, you know, expecting this kind of interaction and these kind of things, and you're not giving her that, so if you do that, then you'll all be happy, and then, you know, then it'll all be nice. But why do you have to do that? Why does he think like that? Why does she think like that? You're not educating. You're just working out some... We're removing an obstacle, but you're not educating. So the modern, the psychologist doesn't educate you. The Vedic, they do. The modern doctor doesn't educate you. The Ayurvedic doctor does. You know? Does that make sense? Like that. And in the West, if they do get into these things, it gets new agey, so it has a little bit, but it's mostly more mystical, so it's more about an experience. So, also distracting.
So certain that the example that you gave, for where outside counselors certainly ask this question about how's the sex going, etc. Such questions certainly go against our core values.
Mm-hmm.
So that's for sure. I mean, we can't take that. But I wanted to ask about, sometimes there are some skills. Like for example, you know, there's something called listening skills. You know, when you're talking to a person, how do you allow that person to bring out everything?
Mm-hmm.
Or certain people talk about, you know, what they call non-violent communication, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be some stuff which may not contradict our core values, but if somebody can take that and see the connection to Krishna, etc., and mm-hmm. use that, then how would that be? I mean, how would we look at that part?
Okay, let us take the two examples you took. One of the, what was the listening you said? Which one?
Listening skills.
Listening skills. Empathic listening.
Yeah.
What are some other fancy words?
Non-violent communication.
It's all the same thing. Okay, so what does that mean? It means that you're willing to listen to the other person and give attention rather than be, you know, answering some text or something. Like that. So the point is someone's talking, you want to talk. So you don't talk, you listen. So how do you do that? That's because then you have to control the ego. Because what's your identity here? You're supposed to be listening. So therefore, according to that, then there's process of listening. You look, you make eye contact, you hear, you nod, you do all the different things, right? Like that. Does that make sense? I mean, any Indian knows that. You could go and be talking to them, and they're nodding their head, listening and everything. They don't even know what language you're talking. And you've gone on talking for 20 minutes. Right? You've talked for 20 minutes, and you think, wow, this is the nicest listener I've ever heard of, never seen. He didn't understand a thing you said. So in other words, it's a culture. So therefore, that you value others, that you see yourself as humble and others as important, does that not come from our philosophy or not? So you may become aware of that point from the karmi, but if you champion that that's where the knowledge is, that means you're uneducated. There's nothing that's not in our books. We just are not intelligent enough to understand it. You understand? So if you became aware of it from the karmi, fine. But then if you're not trying to bring it up to, because we have this disease that, oh, it's Western, it must be good. Right? Prabhupada was preaching in India for a long time. How much result was gained? Practically nothing. Right? He goes to the West and he brings, you know, white people. Now the Indians want to know about it. Right? You know, their devotees were saying, you know, they were talking about bringing, I think, a Mercedes or something for Prabhupada like this. And, you know, he says, yeah, and have very dark, you know, tinted windows, white car. And on the side of the car, then you write, the guru of the USA. And then when the car pulls up, they want to know when Prabhupada gets out. Now, okay, now they have respect. He gets out with all these Western devotees. In fact, they were driving the car. Woo, like that. You understand? So there's this disease. So the whole point is that you can learn from anywhere. Just like it says, you can take gold from a dirty place. Do you leave it dirty? You found a ring in the mud. You put it on like that. And people say, "How come? What kind of ring is that? Looks like a mud ring." No, it's a gold ring. It says gold, but it looks like mud. No, I found it in the mud. Like that, really nice mud. You know, very smooth, you know, it doesn't affect. You think it'd be a little grainy and it would kind of get into your fingers. But no, it's really good. Good, I like this mud. You know, you should try it. Take your ring, stick it in the mud. You understand? So this is what's going on. You find it in a dirty place, fine. But why don't you wash it? Why don't you polish it? You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. We get it from there, and then, no, but it's from them. Indians have been doing this since time immemorial. You understand? Why is it so nice to go, you have a problem, go talk to your grandmother, grandfather, because they listen. Nobody else does. Right? They got nothing else to do, or at least nothing else that they think they have to do. Right? Other people are so...
Free of charge.
Yeah, free of charge also, right? Like that, you know. Can you imagine? I mean, just on this point, this is a side point. You know how in India sometimes this is a real problem because you want to take care of your grandparents, you know, your parents and stuff like that and all that, but then there's the difficulties because, you know, it means you have to work, you got the wife, you got the kids and all that, so extra money. And so here, these grandparents are doing something that's such a valuable skill. Right? You know, how much do they charge an hour now, like these psychologists and stuff like that? You know? What do you have here? So much? No one knows?
Thousands.
Thousands per hour, right? So, can you imagine if they would just charge for listening? They'd be able to take care of themselves. They'd be on a yacht in the Caribbean. They'd be doing so good. Right? So that's what I mean. In the mode of goodness, we just take it for granted, and then we think, oh, here's something in the West, because they talk about it like it's so special. They just figured it out yesterday. Modern medicine only figured out in the late 1800s that there were germs. Most of their patients died because of the uncleanliness. They didn't wash their hands. They didn't wash their clothes. They didn't wash where they're going to cut or then nothing. So you really had to have good karma to survive. You understand? Like that. And then when it was brought up, most of the doctors said this is nonsense. That there's microbes that you can't even see and we're going to worry about them. It wasn't until I think the early 1900s that it was kind of became generally accepted. So that means for 110 years they've accepted that there's germs. Right? Well, in India, everybody washes their hands after doing everything, before doing anything. In fact, you're doing an Arctic, you're washing your hand in between each item. You understand? Lord Brahma is talking about the Indigopa. Those are germs. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that we take it for granted that all the Indian stuff, yeah, this and that, but it's so much more than whatever's there in the West. So, if you haven't come across it in your experience in the Indian scenario and from a Western body of knowledge, you catch the point. They were able to explain it or something, you caught it. But then, where's the root? You ever heard of Vedic mathematics? Okay. That was developed, how we know it, by one Shankaracharya of the Govardhan Math in Puri. You know, back, I think, in the, whatever, 20s, 30s, or something like that. So they have a system that they go out, they see the astrology and all that, and then they figure out who's going to be the next Acharya. The guy doesn't know it, but then one day they just come and collect him, and now he's the Acharya. So, you know, sometimes they come willingly, sometimes they don't. So he was a double MA in math before he became the Shankaracharya. Then, having that faith that everything's in the Vedas, so therefore he studied for 8 years all the scriptures that dealt with anything with math or anything connected. And then he saw all the patterns that they used. And then he gave all the 16 main and I think the 16 corollary theorems about how it works. Not that those names that he gave are Vedic. He's just showing what they're using in the, you know, the Silpa and Solva Shastras and stuff like that. So that's what we do. We don't just leave it that, yeah, it's here, and then I start talking. No, but in the modern it says, you know, so what? And then come back after 5 years and they'll say exactly the opposite. Guaranteed. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, like, oh, you know, that's soy protein this, soy protein that, and now they're saying soy's bad for you because of it messes up your hormones and stuff like that. You know, how you say? You know, you understand? But it was the thing, spirulina coming out of your ears, it's this thing, that, the perfect food and all that. Now it's, it kind of messes up your, you know, B12. You know, it's the highest thing in B12, yeah. It has, but not the kind you can absorb. It absorbs whatever's in your body. You understand? So whatever it is that they say today is good, tomorrow they'll say it's bad, and then the next day they'll say it's good again. You understand? That's the point of speculation, because it's ascending. Descending knowledge is never speculation. What I talked about, what I mentioned to you about the essential points of marriage counseling, any marriage counselor can use that on any marriage couple, whether they're Vedic, non-Vedic, nothing, aboriginal, anything. Because this works on the principles of what's there in the descending process. Now, detail you might catch from these people, but you have to connect it up, and so it takes on the new flavor. And so now it's coming from there rather than coming from the bottom. Because the bottom, it has that false ego. And that false ego will always get in your way. Okay? Okay, no, we have to stop here. We'll start again after. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki